quarter to 10, we're proposing to start. And the first motion, 85, and Cara McCabot will propose that motion.
Thank you, Conference, for giving me the opportunity to speak on this motion this morning. The creative industries sector has been rapidly growing and developing in recent years, and while we're all very optimistic about its developments in this sector, it is still very much in its infancy and needs to be properly nourished and supported. If correctly supported, the creative industries has the potential to be a major economic driver for the region. But for this has to happen, fixed amount of sufficient funding needs to be allocated to the sector by the Department of Culture, Arts and Leisure. The growing reputation as a telegenic location is thought to have somewhat amplified the number of visitors to Northern Ireland. Countless people visit Northern Ireland to view the areas where film takes place for programmes such as the Game of Thrones, Dracula and the Fall, award-winning movies like Philomena, which was recently filmed in the constituency I proudly represent, South Down. Invest NI set out a long-term vision for creative industries in Northern Ireland, that by 2020, Northern Ireland will be an internationally acclaimed hub for technological, creative, excellent and digital media, developing and distributing innovative digital media and technologies to global makers, markets. For this reason to be achieved, and for the creative industries in Northern Ireland to continue to be successful, sufficient funds need to be set aside by the Minister. Whilst the latest programme for government recognised the importance of the creative industries to the development of our economy, the Executive failed to significantly invest and further grow this industry to its full potential. Instead, the Sinn Féin DUP power duo have walked us into a financial crisis situation, and such the 2015-2016 draft budget set out a 10% cut in the budget for culture, arts and leisure, which equates to around a £10 million loss to the department. This cut to the budget of culture, arts and leisure will most certainly impact negatively on the creative industry sector, and funding streams such as the Creative Industries Innovation Fund will take a hit. At a time when we should be growing this new market, the executive could stifle and long-term developments in this sector. Thank you, Conference.
Yes. Okay, could we vote on that motion? Those for, raise your hands. Motion passed. Motion 86. Again, Karen, will propose.
I bring before you, Conference, the motion on working class arts inclusion. I believe that the arts are not a luxury to be enjoyed only by an elite group in society. They are to be enjoyed by absolutely everyone, regardless of community background, income levels, education, age or disability. Research has shown that adult participation rates in the arts were 30% lower in the most deprived areas. The facts also confirm that participation was lower amongst those who had never worked, had no qualifications, or had a limiting or long-term illness. This is a trend that needs to be reversed. Involvement and participation in the arts can bring many benefits to society, from tackling mental health problems to social isolation. They also make our grey world a bit more colourful. It is important for the executive to take notice of the ongoing inquiry by the Committee of Culture, Arts and Leisure into the inclusion of arts and working class, and based on findings and recommendations, implement a strategy to take the arts accessible to all. I fundamentally believe that every individual should have equal access to the high quality arts, including concerts, theatre performances, plays, pantomimes, movies and more. The Minister for Culture, Arts and Leisure has said that assessing and participating in the arts is a social justice issue. She's right. But to rectify this problem, she, along with her executive colleagues, need to produce a proactive strategy based on any recommendations from the inquiry. It is also imperative that the Minister for Culture, Arts and Leisure gives the support needed for the inquiry to be completed in a thorough and timely manner. I further call on the executive to sit up and take note of this inquiry as it seeks to tackle working class arts inclusion and provide the necessary backing for change. Thank you, Conference.
Yes, we will vote on it. Those for the motion, raise your cards. That's universal. Thank you. Motion 87. Brian Tierney to introduce.
My name is Councillor Mark O'Donnell. I'm just doing a bit of a subs role for Brian Tierney at the minute. Our motion is that conference notes that the economic impact of City of Culture 2013 on the Northwest economy. It further notes the growth potential of cultural tourism in the region and calls on the Minister of Culture, Arts and Leisure to fulfil her pledge to finance the City of Culture Legacy Project. Tip O'Neill famously said that all politics is local. Bearing that in mind, I stand here today asking you to support a motion that is very local to me, very local to my party colleagues in Foyle, and most importantly, very local to my friends and neighbours, the citizens of Derry. Last year was a very memorable year in Derry's history. We were awarded City of Culture status. Our city was recognised as a centre of cultural excellence, and in true Derry style, we enjoyed a year-long party to celebrate this achievement. We had events galore. We staged the first ever Flack Cuil na hÉireann north of the border. We hosted the Turner Prize. We witnessed the return of Colm Keel, and BBC's One Big Weekend even paid us a visit. All in all, 2013 was a very successful year for Derry. People flocked to our city from throughout Ireland, and international visitors were at record levels. Hotel rooms were full, bars and restaurants were packed, and the city was doing well. The promise of City of Culture really lived up to its expectations. We always knew the City of Culture year would be a roaring success. We always knew that we would have amazing events that the entire city would enjoy. We always knew that visitors would come to our city and revel in the atmosphere and enjoy the hospitality of the locals. We always knew that 2013 would be a good year. But before the party even started, many people questioned how we were to sustain this momentum. How were we as a city to build on this economic boom and capitalise on our newfound fame? Legacy was the answer. City of Culture 2013 needed funding from the executive to happen. Therefore, the legacy of City of Culture needs funding from central government too. The Culture Minister, Carol McCullen, has pledged to deliver the City of Culture legacy. She made an impassioned speech to her Sinn Féin supporters at Derry's Gas Yard last year, making promises that so far she has not delivered on. She promised to set up a company to deliver City of Culture legacy programmes and activities. This has not happened. She promised to set up a Decal Northwest office to assist this company. This has not happened either. While there's been a series of legacy events that have largely been funded by Derry City Council, with little financial support from the Culture Minister, the Sinn Féin Minister has requested money from the executive to fund her legacy plans. She has bids for millions in monitoring rounds, but until October, she was still unsuccessful. The Finance Minister awarded $2.8 million last month for City of Culture capital projects, and amazingly, Carol McCullen has decided to fund a sports hall in Coleraine with the money. I'm sure that Coleraine needs a sports hall, but I'm not sure that if money earmarked for City of Culture legacy projects should be used to finance this. To summarise, the Culture Minister needs to reaffirm her commitment to the City of Culture. She needs to deliver on her promises to create a meaningful legacy to 2013, and she needs to do this immediately. Thank you, Conference.
Colin, will you second this motion?
Dominic. Yeah, nice. You knew I was coming up, so we put the light on and I'd be stopped. Thanks very much, Conference, and thanks very much, Rosemary. Mark has laid out the case very well. When we went to Liverpool to make the case for Derry to become the first ever UK City of Culture. There was a bit of debate about the UK bit, but we'll get over that. We made the case that Derry would have there would be a real step change in Derry after the City of Culture. And I think we made the case, and I think we convinced the judges that Derry becoming the City of Culture would leave a real legacy for the people of our city, a city that has been devastated by IRA bombs and unionist and British discrimination over the years. I think we made that case very well, because we could make the case And others didn't always get the case, by the way. The SDLP were to the fore in supporting the idea of the city of culture, when Sinn Féin, for example, didn't support it at all. Even when we went to Liverpool, Sinn Féin still hadn't signed up to support the financial package that was required from the council, but success has many fathers. But the point that we made was that Derry would be changed massively by the city of culture. It would be a legacy for the people who needed it most. And that has to still be the case. We had a fantastic party, as Mark said. We were able to hold the biggest Irish festival of Irish culture in the city of culture the day after, and on the same street as the biggest loyalist bands parade marched through Derry city centre. I think that was an example of how our city has changed. But you don't leave a legacy by stopping the party on the 1st of January 2014. The SDLP showed its commitment immediately as soon as the announcement was made by Alex Atwood, giving £10 million as DSD minister. It took a lot longer for Sinn Féin's culture minister to give her £12 million, and we had a fight for that. But what we need now is the culture minister to make a commitment to the legacy of the city of culture. She just hasn't done it. There has been no commitment. There's been lots of announcements, and they're very good at that. Lots of announcements about all the things that are going to happen. But as Mark said, there's £2.8 million in the last monitoring round, and that's going to Coleraine. And Coleraine deserves a sports centre as much as anywhere else. But nobody can tell me that that's going to be go towards the legacy of the city of culture. So this isn't about Sinn Féin bashing, but they do have the culture ministry. It's important that they begin to use it for creating a real legacy for our young people in Derry. Thank you very much.
Are there any other speakers to this motion? In that case, will we vote on this motion? Raise your hands. Motion passed. We now move to an emergency motion from Lisburn Branch. Conor Quinn to propose. It hasn't yet appeared on the screen, but could I read it out for you? That conference condemns the decision by RTE to cease broadcasting RTE Radio 1 on long wave. Conference notes that such a decision is incompatible, and there you are. You can read the rest for yourself. Right, Conor?
Conor Quinn from the Lisburn branch, rising to move this emergency motion. I think it's an appropriate emergency motion. The decision to cease long wave broadcasting on RT Radio 1 was only taken at the end of September, so I think it's appropriate that we as conference consider the matter. The wording's before you. I think it's, just to give a bit of background to those who haven't followed the issue, RTE originally announced the decision to cease broadcasting Radio 1 on long wave 252 on the 27th of September, at the end of September, proposing that it would be closed down at the end of October with less than 4 weeks' notice. RTE's motivation for this is essentially about €250,000 of energy costs in maintaining the long wave broadcaster. I suppose I should give the science bit at the start of this debate. You can think of FM as high quality radio broadcasting but very short range. You can think of medium wave as a bit longer range but lower quality. Long wave is very long range, spreading into GB as well, and generally very low quality. Their decision to do this has caused quite a furore. The major issue actually has been with regard to connections with the Irish diaspora in Britain. But it also has a knock-on effect to citizens living in the north in terms of access to RT Radio 1. Given the pressure that's been brought to bear on them, given the fury that has arisen, they have decided to delay this the closing down of the service till the end of January. I suppose while the diaspora effect is arguably the more substantive, it's also important to understand RTE's statutory duty to citizens in the north. The Broadcasting Act, which underpins RTE's operations, makes it absolutely clear that RTE's first object is to establish, maintain and operate a broadcasting service, the characteristic of a public service, be free to air and be made available to the whole community of the island of Ireland. So the motivation behind this motion is not some sort of notional, aspirational, nationalist outlook. It's actually based on the founding principles of RTE and its responsibilities. The motion has three main elements to conclude. First of all, it's to send a clear message to RTE from this party, and I would hope that subsequently I could work with the General Secretary on a communication to that effect. To make it clear to RTE that, and remind it of its duty to listeners in the North, and that our position is that actually RTE provisions should be made on the broadcasting infrastructure that exists in Northern Ireland. So, for example, the FM and medium wave broadcasting infrastructure that we have. We shouldn't, as Irish citizens, have to rely on overspill for the provision of this public service broadcasting. And thirdly, the final part of the motion deals with the deficiency of these powers not being devolved to the Northern Ireland Assembly and tries to sharpen up this party's position that telecommunication and broadcasting matters should be a matter that we continue to promote in any further discussions around a further devolution settlement. And to that end, I would welcome the comments made by Dolores last night on highlighting broadcasting and telecommunications issues should be devolved to the Northern Ireland Assembly and to local citizens. So on that basis, I move the motion and I urge conference to support it. Thank you.
Claire Hannah to second the motion? Just from there. Right. Do you want to speak to the motion, Claire? No? Right. Dominic, to speak to the motion?
Well, you are, Steve Gulair, August, Gum Wakers Lishan, Rahir Lachinshaw, a sort Cad Kainche, a Hodge and Runshaw. Esintach slua komosha ekal sti sahala kolusha hermaitin kaimera gwel me sasta tachiak to hochton runsha agus kapn gar run tawak take kahaira he don the dini don the heronishin ta in the goni hal assassin agus inatiki ellis of ratan war. Thank you very much, Chair, for giving me the opportunity to speak on this motion. I do think it is an important motion, especially in relation, as the motion says, to the Irish diaspora in Britain. Many Irish people in Britain down through the years have depended on RTE and on Radio 1 especially to receive news from home and to keep abreast of current affairs and other sporting and cultural events back at home. And I have members of my own family who live in the Manchester area, and they are very much concerned about this issue, and they have raised it with me, as have others. So I'm very pleased to support the motion, and I think that we should do, all of us should do all in our powers, especially our public representatives, to make our thoughts and our views known on this. I do welcome the reference to the devolution of broadcasting powers in the motion, and I know that Dolores did mention that last night. It's something I think that the party needs to do more research on, just to clarify exactly what the implications of that would be. We did debate a motion on this very issue in the Assembly, and although it looks like a worthy and worthwhile thing to do, the implications of it might be so complicated that it will be a difficult process. So, in principle, I agree with that part of the motion, with the caveat that we should do further research to identify exactly what the implications of that change would be. But tivmi the shintame bra sasta tachiach the hoch don run. I'm very happy to support the motion, and I thank those who brought it to the floor. Gro Míle Maí Agaibh, thank you very much.
Tim Atwood to speak to the motion.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Conference. I think it is a very important motion. And there's a number of practical examples. And I'd like to pay credit, actually, previous MLA for South Down, PJ Bradley, raised this issue a number of years ago with RT, because this is not the first time that we've seen the national broadcaster try to limit its services into not only the six counties, but to the Irish diaspora, both in the UK and across the world. So there was meetings at that time a number of years ago, and I don't think RT took on board seriously those concerns. But you know, for me, practically, I can get into a car, travel everywhere around the north, and get RTE FM. And then you arrive home and you can't get it in your house. So if you can't get it in your house, the only way you can get it is through long wave. So it's a very practical problem for me, my family, and for many people, both in Belfast and across the north and for the diaspora. So it's a very practical issue. If you want to get RTE, unless you have good Wi-Fi networks in your home, then you will not be able to get it if this actually happened. The other thing we should note, and there's a broader debate here, how often do you go onto RTE Player? And it says, you're trying to get a programme or a match or something, and that it says, only in Ireland. Only in Ireland. It doesn't actually say in the Republic of Ireland, it says only in Ireland, which means the six counties have been discriminated by RTE because you can't access, in this part of Ireland, programmes that you can access in the 26 counties. So there's wider issues at play here. I think there's a wider debate with RTE about how they service the six counties and how they service the Irish diaspora generally. So I think there's an important debate about long wave, but also wider RTE's engagement in the north. Thank you.
Could we now vote on this motion? Those for? Thank you. So we move to motion 88, and Dominic Bradley will propose.
Rish Gramila Mayogov, Agus Gumbwikas Latsa Foster Carly. Thank you very much, Chair. This motion is almost a composite motion. It covers three or four different items, all of which are important. The motion urges the Minister for Culture, Arts and Leisure to publish the Irish Language Strategy. As you remember, an Irish Language Strategy and an Irish Language Act was part of the St Andrews Agreement. But to date, we have not seen the shape of either the Act or the Strategy. The Minister has consulted on the Strategy, and she tells us that she will be ready to publish it in January of next year. And I hope that that becomes a reality. One of my concerns about an Irish Language Strategy is the way in which it will be funded. I have asked the Minister on several occasions to outline how it will be funded, and her answer to that has been that it will be down to, or up to, every individual Minister to fund that section of the strategy which applies to his or her department. So that answer really means this: there is no budget. There is no specific budget for the strategy, and the funding of the strategy is at the whim of individual ministers. To me, that is not a good way to go forward. If we are serious about a strategy for the Irish language, then we must be serious also about providing a dedicated budget for it. The SDLP, a number of years ago, drafted its own Irish language bill. It was the only party to have done so. We presented it to the Minister of Culture, Arts and Leisure. As yet, she has not responded to it. She has not even replied to acknowledge the fact that she has received it. It's difficult to have confidence in a minister who can't even organise an acknowledgement letter, never mind a piece of legislation. An Irish Language Act, I think, is the most important aspect of this motion. because when something is enshrined in legislation, then you can be sure that the funding will follow, because a legal duty is placed on ministers to provide for what the Act asks. A strategy, yes, it sounds good. It would be good if the budget were there to support it. Without legislation, ministers are free to do as much or as little as they wish. With an Irish Language Act, we would be sure that those actions which are required would take place. Finally, Madam Chair, I see that the light's changing here. I want to place on record this party's support to the magazine mentioned in the third part of the motion there on Tultach. The funding for this magazine, which has been published in Ulster for the last 90 years, has been withdrawn by Forrest na Gaeilge. There has been quite a vociferous campaign led by Raymond O'Kieran from Gaelin in Armagh, and I want to ensure that we as a party, that we support his and his colleagues' call for that funding to be restored. During the week gone by, I had a meeting with the Minister for State for the Gaeltacht, Joe McHugh, and I brought him to Armagh, and we met with Raymond and others, and we put the case to him for refunding on Tultach. I think he was impressed by the enthusiasm of those volunteers who month after month published the magazine. It has been an integral part of teaching and learning Irish across our schools and colleges since its foundation, and I believe very strongly that it should continue. And just to end, I want to acknowledge the work done by the many Irish language groups throughout the north and further afield on a voluntary basis for the Irish language. For them, it is a work of passion. They give their time freely, and they dedicate it to others in order that they will be able to share in the riches of the Irish language, which is their cultural heritage. Conference, I urge you to support these motions, and thank you very much.
Do we have a seconder for this motion? Karen? Would you now vote on this motion? Those for? That's carried. We now proceed to motion number 89. Carmen Rogers will propose.
Good morning, conference. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to bring this to awareness and attention of the conference. There had been quite a lot of controversy about pilots and officers in the Second World War. And last year, a lot of this controversy was lifted, and they were acknowledged in Westminster, and each historically and in remembrance, each pilot officer was given a cross. However, this is not the case in Northern Ireland. I do not know what is going on. My uncle, Frank Rogers, is buried in St. Mary's Cemetery in Uri. However, his name failed to meet the cenotaph in Uri, and he has never been acknowledged for his war efforts or for his exemplary record. His widow died a number of months ago, and therefore it's an opportunity to look into this and to see what is going on. I think that we have to look for parity with our unionist counterparts in the celebration and the acknowledgement of these people. And I just want to raise awareness and to say that this is something which has been overlooked. Certainly in the cenotaph in Uri, there are other people better acknowledged from the unionist community who have not gained and put into the war effort in the way that Frank did. Thank you, conference. I ask you to consider this.
Do we have a seconder for this motion? Justin? Thank you. There are no other speakers to this motion, so therefore, can we vote on it? Would you raise your cards for vote for? Thank you. Motion passed.